ice cold beer.
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
Good morning and welcome back to the Bench Shuckies here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Mike Lawes, joined in the dugout by Brian Svensson.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
It's a weird morning. Like it's overcast, but it's like muggy. It's supposed to get up to 31.
I think it's got a lot to do with the smoke rolling in from BC, because that's why it was so orange yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday morning, my son thought the moon was still out, and I was like, no, that's just a hazy sun.
Yeah, it's real hazy. It's something, all right. But I don't know. I don't necessarily mind this weather. It's cool enough that I can wear jeans without being, you know, insanely hot.
This is true.
I hope it's not hot tomorrow because I got slow pitch tournament.
Oh, there you go. The Gold Eyes, of course, hosting a series this weekend too, so hopefully not too hot for the folks who sit in Shaw Park and drink their beers. So we're gonna go around the horn here on the old MLB news. I guess I probably want to start with the Acuna.
Yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to start it too.
I kind of figured this would be, we didn't necessarily plot out the show ahead of time, but I just imagined this is where you wanted to kind of kick things off.
Knows how to read my mind. This is exactly where I wanted to kick things off. So Jose Urena plunks Acuna in the arm.
This is a Braves rookie phenom, Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, future
probably
superstar.
One of the two likely rookie of the year candidates, I would say.
It's him or Juan Soto, right?
It's him and Juan Soto, I think.
Yeah, so you know, you've got this absolute future superstar. You could, you know, make the argument that he's even a star already on a team that is going to make the playoffs, and a pitcher on a team that is is not even going to be anywhere near the playoffs. Maybe even the most irrelevant team in baseball, the Miami Marlins, and he just like throws at him for whatever reason, hits him. Luckily. The MRIs and all the scans showed nothing, no real damage. And then Major League Baseball suspends Urena for one start. Five games.
So, one start. As a pitcher, it's one start. Yeah.
It's nonsense. It's so ridiculous. You got to protect your stars. You got to protect your players in general, but you got to protect your stars. And for a guy that's out of the playoffs, one start doesn't mean anything to him. Right? Like, it's a little pocket change and one start that he's not going to care about missing.
No, this is true. And I know that he only misses one start as a pitcher. In terms of, like, docking their pay, let's say, right?
Right.
Does that, like, would he, he'd lose 5 games worth of pay, though?
Correct.
Because it's, like, prorated based on.
Right. You can't be in the dugout or whatever. You can't be in the clubhouse for those 5 games. But no, it's just the dugout. I think you can be in the clubhouse, but you can't be in the dugout or the bullpen.
So he loses 1 game of actual on-field performance, but he loses 5 games worth of pay.
Right, but like,
but that's still like out of 162 games prorated. That's
not a lot.
Significant amount.
No, I don't know. I think that the fine should be bigger, and I think that pitchers should miss more time.
Considering, you know, the rule changes, the slide into home. To protect
the catchers.
There have been other moves to protect players in terms of, you know, like padding on outfield walls.
Yep.
There's like kind of, I wouldn't say stricter, but more kind of oversight in terms of like
yes.
what they, the ballpark kind of construction or
I think the only safety. Team that gets away with it is the Cubs with the ivy, right? Because there's no padding there. It's just literally brick wall behind
the
ivy.
It's grass and brick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those sort of like grandfathered things. Because
yeah, like you're not gonna force the Cubs to put like padding on the wall behind the ivy, otherwise it just looks stupid.
It ruins the aesthetics of it, and that's one of the few sort of aesthetic
yeah.
ballparks that has that history. So yeah, there's been a bunch of like player protection moves, and actually even fan protection moves, right, with the extension of the netting.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one area where it's a pretty obvious issue of protection.
Mm-hmm.
That they have done nothing about. And, I mean, is this one of those things where it's just because of that history of the code of, like,
I think
you
so.
Know, plunking players is some sort of, like, God-given right that pitchers have?
I think it's so silly. Like, I mean, obviously you're not going to suspend a guy for a whole whack load of games if, you know, the ball accidentally slips out of his hand. And you can never prove intention, right? But, like, in some cases you can see that there's blatant intention. In the Arena case, when Hunter Strickland plunked Bryce Harper,
there's guys who are headhunters.
When Syndergaard's thrown behind, who was it? Utley? Was it Utley in the Dodgers game? The jackpot, the one with the ump was talking about being in the jackpot.
Yeah, there's certainly, I mean,
you
yeah,
know,
there
like,
are, there are going to be ambiguous cases where maybe it was just a control issue and this is like
right.
you know, a wild pitch that's errant. But there are ones where like there's bad blood between the players, mm-hmm. or bad blood between the teams.
Yep.
And then, you know, the star player gets plunked and, you know, the bench is clear.
Yeah.
Those circumstances, you can kind of tell.
Yeah, exactly. And then in those instances, you have to lay the law down. You got to put the hammer down, right? You know, and in the ambiguous cases, I think you have to fault on the side of laying that like laying the law down to protect these guys because you have to protect your stars.
It's probably better as a whole that if you like you just punish it in general, like and you just say like
yes.
you know, we can't tell and like you know 100% that this was the intent, but we're just gonna say
right,
it's not happening
right,
right like and so maybe we don't. We catch a few minnows in this, dolphins in this net designed for tuna, but most of the time we're catching tuna here.
Exactly. And I think that something that they could go on and do as well that would really, really help would be to implement like, a three strike policy, right? You know, first time that a guy plunks a guy in intentional or ambiguous circumstances, you know, it's two starts. The second time it's three starts. The fourth time, then it's like a serious hearing, you know, with like real, you know, potential consequences to miss a lot of time because you can't keep having guys like this with anger issues and ego problems getting shown up by, you know, younger players thinking, oh, they haven't done their due yet going out and plunking these guys. Baseball needs personality. Baseball doesn't need grouchy pitchers weeding out personality.
No, this is absolutely true that these self-selected enforcers really don't have like legitimate roles in the game. They've just decided that this is what they're going to do.
Yes.
I mean, it's the same thing with like when Papelbon and Harper had a dust up, you know, Papelbon decided he was some sort of like voice of authority in that dugout and was going to like
choke Bryce Harper.
Harper's behaviors. And, yeah, no, like there's the same sort of graduated thing they have for PEDs where like each successive infraction means a larger suspension, bigger ramifications,
yep.
but there's a certain point at which, nah, you're done.
Yeah, you're just done.
You've clearly demonstrated you can't.
Right, you're just done.
Stop doing this.
And like if you think about some of the most influential, exciting moments that are going to be the defining moments of this generation of baseball, almost all of them include some level of personality, right? Mm-hmm. Of guys getting really excited after the fact, right? Like, I guarantee you that 40 years from now, people are still going to be watching the Jose Bautista bat flip.
Yeah. I'm not a Blue Jays fan. We've
established
this. When I went to Toronto, I found a Joey Flippin' Bats t-shirt that, like...
Yeah.
immortalizes that moment. I was like, I got to have that as a baseball fan in general.
Exactly.
I'm not tied to this team, but I'm tied to that moment because that moment was like indescribably fun.
That's one of them, you know, Bumgarner freaking out, like just getting like super excited and yelling and flexing on the mound after that Giants World Series win where he was just a monster and started what three times and came out of the bullpen once. Mm-hmm. Like that'll be something too. You know, the massive celebration with the Cubs when they won the World Series, right? Like, when guys show their emotions and personality, I think, like, those are going to be the most important things. You know, probably, like, the two moments from the Cubs you're going to think about, right, are going to be when Anthony Rizzo's in the dugout telling David Ross that he's like, you know, he's freaking out. That's hilarious. That's so funny. And then, you know, when they win and he puts the ball in his pocket, like people are going to think about that, you know, 40 years from now.
Right. It's
personality, the big moments.
Well, and we've talked about this before in terms of the marketing of MLB and that, like, you need these personalities. You need these young people to kind of connect through social media, through, like, I mean, this is why we talk about the success of the NBA, right? Like, the players are the commodity.
Yes.
And that's why people watch. And baseball has held to this thing about, like, the tradition is the commodity. And I'll be honest, like, maybe I'm, because I was, when I was born, I you know, look at old stories and read Jim Bouton's biography and Catfish Hunter and stuff like that. But there's no way in heck, like, a 20-year-old getting into baseball right now,
I mean, again, like
that stuff.
I'm very similar to you, right? I grew up a baseball fan in a baseball family that like just was drawn to the game and the history and the grandeur of it right from the very beginning. But there are less and less people like us and more people that are going to go to a game, see that it's whatever, like an hour and a half worth of downtime and are just going to spend most of it on their phone, not caring.
Right. And so things like, you know, web gems and memes and Instagram posts and stuff like that depend on sort of the personality and the kind of like immediacy of that. And that's something baseball really needs to.
They don't allow the players to show emotion. And when they do show emotion, the rest of baseball beats them back down. And they don't allow the fans to like make gifable vines, gifables and vines and videos, short little videos of it. Baseball Twitter exploded over the past week, speaking of fights, about Andrew McCutchen talking about, like, fights in baseball, and it was hilarious.
Okay, so I haven't been on Twitter a whole lot this week, I'll be quite honest. I was on holidays last week and have been playing catch-up on a lot of things, so I have not spent any time on Twitter.
He did a series of, like, really short videos on his Twitter or his Instagram, one of the two. I can't remember, but I've seen it. And he's just like talking about fights like in baseball about like, he's like, I bet y'all are wondering about like what happened with this fight over the, like at the past time. And he's just like, well, this is what I was seeing in my perspective and blah, blah, blah. And it was like this really funny video of him just being like, just talking about it. And it was really, really entertaining. I'm going to see if I can pull it up over the course of this show. And if I find it by the time that that the show is over, I'll make sure that we play it, but it's really entertaining and hilarious. And I just think that like there should be more stuff like this, you know, more stuff like guys just talking about it. And oh, okay, I found it, but yeah. So I'll make sure that we get it on there.
Throw it on our Twitter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is something. It's a recurring drum we like to beat in terms of institutional change in baseball. That this needs to be like a top down thing. That the league office needs to take the initiative, take charge, and really actually like make some legitimate changes that really only they can do, right? Like unless you impose some sort of fine or some sort of like legit consequences on these behaviors, they're going to continue.
Correct. And like, don't get me wrong, I enjoy base brawls. I think they're entertaining, but at the same time, like the fact that most of them come when someone's safety is threatened bothers me. I sent the tweet out. Added the bench jockeys in it or whatever the heck. So okay, we can maybe play it later. But it's
at the bench jockeys is the
It's really really funny and entertaining. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, baseball needs to protect its superstars. It needs to promote its superstars. And this is something we've been banging on about for 4 months. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So we'll move from sort of Acuna adjacent. So this is a piece that Matthew Leach wrote this morning on MLB.com about the Rookie of the Year race between Ronald Acuna and the Nationals' Juan Soto. So these two, if they're on their maintaining their season-long paces right now, both of them will have historic rookie seasons.
Yes.
So we're looking at, you know, Soto carrying a 148 OPS plus right now, and Acuna is at 145, and these guys are 19 and 20, two of the, you know, younger rookies.
And statistics show that both of these guys will probably end up in the Hall of Fame because of it, right? Guys who are having this good of season this early
in their season,
I think, have like an 85% chance of making the Hall of Fame.
Right, because you're looking at, you know, folks like Trout and Harper are kind of the only recent rookies that have kind of leveled at this point. And I mean, I think Trout could stop now. Like, if he quit baseball this moment, there's a
Barry Sanders
strong chance he would make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think so.
Right now.
I mean, like, he's on
a bigger question.
I don't think Harper does. I think Harper probably will by the time his career's over, but he still has to compile, whereas Trout is like clear and away the best player that baseball has seen since unroided Barry Bonds and Mickey Mantle before that.
So it's speaking of Harper, if they maintain their pace, so they're both Acuna and Soto are at 300 plate appearances,
yes,
on pace for more than 400,
right?
So they're there have never been two players in the same year to manage an OPS of at least 140 while mustering 400 plate appearances.
And the crazy thing is that, like, unfortunately, so they don't play in opposite leagues, so
Harper
they can't
and Machado,
both get them.
Dick Allen and Tony Oliva, Eddie Murray and Andre Dawson, Dusty Baker and Carlton Fisk, Mike Piazza and Tim Salmon. You know,
big names.
These are
big, with the exclusion of Tim Salmon.
Names, obviously. But it's never been done in the same year. And in fact, only 11 times in the history of the game has a player 20 or younger had an OPS of at least OPS plus of at least 140 and 400.
Both of these guys are going to be absolute superstars. They are already stars, and they're going to be superstars. And the emergence of Juan Soto actually means that, like, the Nationals don't have to chase Harper this year. They don't have to pay him. You know, they can have Soto and Eaton and Robles and not care that Bryce Harper walks and spend his money on Brian Dozier and whoever the heck.
Yeah. So I'll go over the list of players since the end of World War One who've posted a season like Soto and Acuna. So the most recent ones, Mike Trout and
big
Alex
name.
Rodriguez.
Heard of both of them.
Heard of both of them. I mean, obviously one of them... his road to the Hall of Fame a little more questionable. What with the PED,
I think A-Rod probably gets in via veterans
probably
committee.
By the time, yeah, I mean, and this is the thing, you know, like as attitudes around PEDs kind of shift, I think we're seeing this.
People
a
my
bit.
Age just don't care, right? Like we grew up with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds. Like we it doesn't bother us as much because we know everybody's using them, right? So if you separate yourself from the pack when everybody is using them, it means you were probably that special, anyways.
Right, and there's strong evidence that he, in the same way that Barry Bonds had, you know, a Hall of Fame path of stats before he was linked
right.
to PEDs.
Whether or not
A-Rod, probably there was, you know, evidence in his early years in like Texas, stuff like that, that he was that kind of player.
Right, and if you believe A-Rod, which I tend to kind of do. He seems to be weirdly honest about the whole thing now that he's been caught twice. he claims that he didn't start using until after his MVP season in Texas because he went to New York, and that's when he said he started using because he just felt pressure to live up to that MVP season.
And to live up that contract.
Right. And so, you know, he had one true MVP season, two more seasons before that where he probably should have won the MVP, and a whole pile of All-Star seasons before that even happened. So, like Barry Bonds, you're right. The guy had Hall of Fame talent before he started using. Mm-hmm. He didn't need to use. It probably hurts his case that he did use. But I think that, you know, when his case finally comes due, there's going to be less people like my dad voting and more people like me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't help his campaign, but certainly as the time between when the PED sort of...
exactly, people like Sam...
erupted.
Right, people like Sam Miller and Ben Lindbergh and Jeff Sullivan are all going to have Hall of Fame votes at that time, and every single one of those guys has said that they don't care. It doesn't bother them.
Yeah, Lindbergh, I think, has talked about that on the Ringer.
More than one podcast. Yeah, he talks about it all the time, how he just it doesn't bother him and he doesn't care. And I agree with him. Like, it just, when everybody's using it, you still have to separate yourself.
So Trout and Rodriguez, the only ones to achieve this in the past 60 years. Before that, Frank Robinson, Al Kaline, and Mickey Mantle.
Heard all of them.
I think you heard of those. And then you back the train up a little further to the 20s and 30s. Ted Williams.
Heard of him.
Mel Ott.
Definitely heard
Fox.
Of him. Yeah.
All that's
incredible
it.
Players.
That's the list.
Those guys are all in the Hall of Fame. They were all absolute superstars. Every single one of them.
And they're the only ones to accomplish what both of these guys so far are on pace to accomplish this season.
So you've got these two superstar kids that are coming forward. And that's exciting. As a baseball fan, that's insanely exciting to know that we have these two kids, barring injury, that are just going to tear the league up for years, and it's going to be super exciting baseball to watch. I'm thrilled.
And this is why the baseball needs to capitalize on the personalities thing, because they've got
both
two
of those
generational
guys,
talents right here,
and both of them have great upbeat, fun personalities. They're wonderful.
And I mean, let's be perfectly honest, they're not white. That helps.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? Having a person of color, having a chance to reach out to the community that honestly
huge
provides so many of the great baseball talents, but you know, there's a disconnect with the fans at times.
I read something actually about that was rather interesting the other day, where someone there was a reporter with a blue check mark next to his name that I'm not going to name any of these names, but it was an argument between two reporters with blue check marks, and one of them was complaining about how Acuña and Soto's English was bad in response to this, right? Talking about like marketing these guys, and he's like, well, you can't market players that can't speak English well. And another reporter with a blue check mark responded with, well, they're working really, really, really hard at their English, but every single upcoming superstar for baseball comes from a Spanish community. Are you working on your Spanish?
Yeah. Thank you for the second blue check marked response, because that's the thing.
Yes.
Right? This is the first blue check mark. I'm not going to speculate. But
Soto, Vlad Guerrero Jr., All native Spanish speakers, all working really hard on their English, but at the same time, like, if you want to get the most out of them, market them in Spanish. Who cares?
This is something that I was listening to Rhea Butcher. Her podcast is called Three Swings, and she was talking about the fact that, you know, currently the Dodgers, there's not a single player of Mexican descent on that roster after, of course, he was on the Mets, and I'm blanking. First baseman.
Oh, Agon.
Agon, Alex Gonzalez. He was the last
Adrian.
One.
Adrian.
And, you know, Adrian Gonzalez. Sorry, yes, not Alex Gonzalez. That was with the Braves, third baseman, I think.
I think he played shortstop for the Bo Sox for a while as well, but anyway.
So, Adrian Gonzalez, the last Mexican player on the Dodgers, you look at that community.
Oh, so Mexican heavy.
And
so,
the
Spanish
fan base, and like, why not like seek out a talent within that community?
Where's Kike Hernandez from?
To really like market and you know, like, because when you think about when you walk up to a ballpark and you see those fence post or like streetlight banners, and they have, you know, like their sort of marketable marquee players:
Brian Dozier, Max Muncy, Clayton Kershaw,
Justin Turner, right? Like it's pretty darn white, and it's like, you know, look at the opportunity that you have within the market that you have to
Yes.
Really kind of
yep.
grow your fan base or engage better with your fan base.
I agree with you. Oh, Kike Hernandez is from Puerto Rico, so not quite, not the same thing.
No, and technically should be considered American based on, you know, the fact that they should have statehood at this point. Speaking of the Dodgers, I don't know if you saw this news this week, but this one amused me about Elon Musk.
I haven't seen this.
So Elon Musk's boring company, which is like boring as in drilling, not boring as in no one cares about it, plans to dig a tunnel to Dodger Stadium.
From where?
So this, I pulled up, it's a Wired article that Jack Stewart wrote. I'd seen it on another site as well. But the proposal is basically like an underground high-speed transit system, 3.6-mile tunnel that would pick up near one of the three LA Metro subway stations and run under Sunset Boulevard, entering in the stadium parking lot to take public transit to the game. Fans would pay about a dollar for the four-minute ride called the Dugout Loop. It's a single tunnel, so just basically back and forth between the two. But that, you know, when you talk about traffic to Chavez Ravine, that
love it's the idea.
Really, really backed up traffic for Dodger games.
I love the idea. I especially love how little they're charging for it. I am wary about an underground transit system in Los Angeles.
Well, the crazy thing is, like, they've already at work on another non-Dodger related.
I mean, there's a reason why everything's above ground in Los Angeles is because, like, you can't be underground when there's earthquakes. That's kind of trouble.
So,
like, they're smart enough, I think, to be able to, like, moderately earthquake resist it. But at the same time, I don't know. That's scary to me. I love the idea. I really, really, really do love the idea. I just don't want a bunch of people to get trapped underground.
So his company has also got plans to dig in West LA under Sepulveda Boulevard, where traffic on the 405 freeway gets especially rough. So the idea is to cut down on freeway traffic by offering, like,
I love it. I think it's such a cool idea.
Short run back and forths.
I think it's such a cool idea.
The artist concept of the vehicle is really awesome. I would encourage people to check out these pods that fit between 18 and 16 people. It'll sit on electric skates.
So a single tunnel, but multiple tracks.
Multiple tracks.
Right? Yeah. So that way you just have like four or five cars going back and forth. They look cool. I think they look cool.
So you mentioned that, you know, because it's a earthquake prone territory, that maybe underground is not necessarily the best way. There is some discussion that another company is proposing, basically like chairlift style, or you know, like kind
so
of,
like ski lifts that just
yeah,
that's pretty funny.
So there's all sorts of interesting ideas about how to get people to and from Chavez Ravine. But I just thought this was like one of those baseball tangential stories that like
I think it's cool.
Tweaked my interest.
No, it's cool. I like it. I especially like the price, right? Like public transport for a buck to go into and from the games. That's wonderful. You're going to see loads of people use it.
If you go to Minneapolis and, you know, the LRT ends at Target Field.
Right.
And, you know, I think game day, it's like $5 round trip.
Yeah, which is like reasonable.
Is super reasonable. But a buck, I mean, so that's $2 round trip. That's
crazy.
That's significantly a cheaper ride.
I mean, more than half cheaper.
Exactly. So looking at the weekend ahead, I think the series that I'm most excited for is the Astros visiting Oakland. I don't know if you've looked at the stats, but currently
Oakland is
only two games back.
Yeah. And this is something I think we talked about, or I think I might have talked about it with Jared on this show a couple weeks ago, but we're in real danger of. And I think that this is something that needs to be addressed by Major League Baseball, but we're in real danger of like the sixth or seventh best team in Major League Baseball missing the playoffs because of the way the playoff system is, right? Like we're in real danger of the Mariners missing the playoffs or the A's missing the playoffs despite being a truly great team this year. Both of them are incredible. The A's and Billy Bean is a wizard. First of all, for figuring out how to get 90 plus wins out of whatever the heck you'd call his roster. Like Jed Lowry and Marcus Semien are your middle infielders.
Entered the season with the lowest payroll in baseball.
He keeps doing it. I can't wait for the second Moneyball. Like the
defending World Series champions, who are a really strong team, who got better. And he is on the cusp of, you know, knocking them out of top spot in the AL West.
It's crazy. Yeah. So like there's a real chance that we're not going to see the Astros, the Mariners, or the A's in the American League playoffs. And not only that, but there is a chance that we will get to see either one of any of them and the Yankees. And as much as I hate the Yankees, they are a good baseball team. The chance we only get to see one of those teams for a single game. That's messed up. Meanwhile, the Rockies are gonna win the NL West. And, like, their team sucks.
You think they're going to win? I mean, they're a game and a half back of Arizona at this point.
I mean, there's a chance. It's either the Rockies or the Diamondbacks, and I think both of those teams are incredibly flawed and much less fun to watch than any of the four teams I just listed in the American League.
No, it's true.
I'm not saying that you should make it so that leagues don't matter. That's not what I'm saying, because I understand that NL fans and AL fans have very divisive opinions on the DH, and that's not going to change anytime soon. But you need to either make the wild card best 2 out of 3, or have more teams make the, like, even one more team make the playoffs and go with a football style. You know, do your best 3 out of 5.
First gets a bye.
First and second get a bye.
And then you get, you know, a short series,
right,
divisional round,
3v4 and or 3v or 3v6 and 4v5, you know, wild card, I divisional mean, conference.
It's a tough argument. It's you know, it's like more baseball versus like more playoff baseball. Like, do you look at maybe shortening the season and to add these games? Because I mean, we're already like October gets into,
I think 162 games is too many
for
games
when we're getting into the World Series.
I think 162 regular season games is too much to begin with. Right, I would go back to 156, or man, I would even go down to like 142. Do you really need 162 regular season baseball games?
It's a good question. I mean, I know because I listen to a few different podcasts that kind of talk about like the business of sports, and talking about, you know, kind of the content mill that like. All these kind of, like, whether it's ESPN or other sports channels need content, right? Like, they have so many hours to fill.
Yeah.
That baseball is always a good bet for them.
And local media really, really, really thrives on it. So, like, most of these channels probably, I don't know, but playoff baseball sells more, right? And the owners know that they can sell playoff baseball for more. And the big cats like ESPN and NBC and Fox are going to continually pay more for playoff baseball because it matters. But it will hurt the local market. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think baseball's in danger of becoming too local, if that makes sense.
This is, and I mean, this is maybe something to do with the what we talked about earlier about the personalities, but that, yeah, like people basically follow their own team
and nothing else.
And so, yeah, I think it was Bill Simmons was talking about the fact that his dad, like, lifelong baseball fan, watches the Red Sox, listens to WEI or whatever, but, like, has no clue about, you know, something like Acuna and Soto.
None.
No interest in the National League, no sort of conception of what it is. And that's, I don't think this is, like, an isolated case. I think this is kind of the standard now.
I think you're right. Yeah, you know, these teams all have local deals, right? And so somebody in Kansas City is not even going to care about the Cardinals, you know, like a team that is in close proximity to them.
Yeah, like they could conceivably just take a day trip to go see.
Yeah, and don't care about that team in the slightest. Don't even care about the league, right? Which I think is just wild to me.
Yeah, because to me, like, the other team coming is very often part of the appeal of a specific game or series.
Right.
You know, oh, so this player's coming, or like,
right,
this,
like,
team's in town.
Being in Manitoba, you being a huge Twins fan, me having at least a moderate interest in the Twins, I'd love to go to any single Twins game, but, like, I'm not paying a bunch of money and driving down and getting a hotel and buying tickets if, like, the Marlins are in town. right? Like, because I know the Marlins suck, and I don't want to watch the Twins beat up for three games on a AAA team. Like, I want to watch actual baseball. So it matters, right? And not knowing who's coming to town or, like, even caring, like, it matters. I don't know.
And maybe by, you know, shaving off some of these regular season games, you get rid of some of that chaff. Like, you don't have to have quite as many.
Well, I think the first step in that direction is you need to get all the way up to 32 teams, so that way there's way less interleague play, right? So that way, like, you don't have to in my opinion, you go up to 32 teams, you cut all the interleague play, period, except for maybe like one or two series a year,
so that you keep something like the Mets, Yankees,
right,
Cubs, Sox,
yep,
like, you know, Subway, crosstown rivalry.
Subway Series is, you know, like the Giants and the A's, the Battle of the Bay.
Angels and Dodgers.
Right.
So those kind of marquee ones.
You keep the important ones, but you don't necessarily have to keep all of them. Right now, every single team, I think, plays against every single other team this year, which I think is, like, it is a combat to that thing that we just talked about, but at the same time, I think that you can cut games when you do that. You know, you get to 32 teams, you cut all the interleague play, you go down to whatever 145 games or 144 games or whatever even number you need to get to, mm-hmm. and you just play more playoff baseball. You put one extra team in and you just play more playoff baseball.
Some of that shaved games with some playoff series that have some more vitality to them.
Yep.
And then that way you can also start the postseason a little earlier.
Yeah, and you don't got to worry about playing into November. Which
we've seen.
God, could you imagine how awful it would be great if the Twins were in the World Series, but how real whatever the weather would be?
November.
There's a real chance
field
of snow.
World Series baseball would be like a
miserable.
Just a crapshoot in terms of, like, I've been to Minneapolis. I can remember one year I was in Minneapolis over the Remembrance Day weekend, and it was beautiful out, but it was like abnormal. The typical thing, I've driven through, like, snowstorms to go down to Viking games.
Yeah, snowstorms. Yeah, no, that's exactly right, right? Like, Minneapolis is the same as us.
Yeah.
They get the same weather as us, and, like, we've had snow before Halloween before.
If, like, the Goldeyes were playing in the American Association Championship in November, like, Shaw Park would be a pretty...
Fergie would be upset.
Bitter place to play.
Fergie would be upset. Yeah, and that was something that kind of weirded me out when I saw the concept and when they built the stadium. I was like, it's beautiful, and it's absolutely gorgeous, and I love it, but what are you going to do if you make the World Series, right? Like, are you planning on not being in the World Series ever? Because crazy.
So one other series this weekend that's kind of interesting is the Mets-Phillies. I mean, there's always that, you know, rivalry of the Mets-Phillies, but what makes it interesting is that this week they play one of their three games. They leave the confines of Citizens Bank Park and head over to Williamsport, Pennsylvania, to play one of the games at the MLB Little League Classic.
Oh, man. Who is that kid's name that was on Jimmy Kimmel? Big Al for the Little League stuff? That kid that looks like Hamilton Porter from The Sandlot that's just absolutely smashing dongs everywhere?
Mm-hmm. So that one is... So that's going to be Sunday Night Baseball, 7:10 p.m. Eastern, 6:10 our time.
I love the Little League World Series.
Yeah,
it's great.
So do I. It always makes for some really great drama and some. I mean, you want to talk good, like, kind of like midday content. If I'm flipping through the channel and there's a Little League World Series game on, and
I'm
like
watching.
2 p.m., I'm in for it.
I'm watching. Oh man, and it's always really funny to be watching. And how old are those kids supposed to be? Like 12?
About that.
And you know, like, a kid will come up to the plate. And he'll be like 6'2", 180 pounds. And you're like, come on, buddy. Come on, buddy.
I would, in the past, would have been like, yeah, sure, I get that. But I have a 9-year-old who's 5'2". So I believe that there are, like, genetic anomalies that some of these kids are legit bigger. That's just how it, I mean, it's the same thing as, like, the punt kick pass footage of Andy Reid. 12-year-old Andy Reid, who dwarfs his competitors in that. If you've ever seen the video,
I
recommend going on YouTube for that one.
It's hilarious.
Like, he looks like he ate two of his competitors. That's how big he is compared to those competitors.
Yeah. Shout out to the Booze on First softball team, by the way. Also, yeah, like, it's crazy. And some of the things, oh my goodness. There's one of the things that I saw, I was watching, and this kid comes up to the plate, and you know how they have, like, the little blurbs of, like, they have the little blurbs of like, different things about the kids, right?
Oh, okay, so, like, the, you know,
favorite food, this and that.
Movie quote.
Right, and one of them, the kid, I was watching, and one of the kids came up, and it was, like, favorite actor, and it said Johnny Sins, and I was like, what do you, who, why did you not fact check that? That's like, that's an adult film industry work actor.
See, I didn't even know who that was.
Yeah.
It sounded like a made up name.
No, well, because it probably is. Yeah. And I was like, first of all, kid, what are you doing? Second of all, why didn't nobody on ESPN fact check that? Like, nobody in the office that was involved in that. None of the 12 people were like, hey, maybe we should check to see who this guy is. Or like one of you was like, hey, I know who that is. We can't put that on.
We need
there.
To put favorite food instead of favorite actor on this one.
Yeah. Just ridiculous. So, like, I'm all in on Little League World Series.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk some injuries back here on the Bench Jockeys, 101.5 UMFM.
Located in Unit 201 at 1109 Henderson Highway, Planet of Sound is 100% Manitoba-owned and proudly independent, your top-notch source for new and used music, video games, and movies. With more than 16 years in the business, Planet of Sound specializes in helping you find that special item to round out your collection. Open Monday through Friday from noon until 8 p.m., Saturdays from 11 until 6 p.m. Visit Planet of Sound today and check out our large assortment of compact discs, vinyl, DVDs, Blu-rays, video games, apparel, collectibles, and more. Planet of Sound, Unit 201 at 1109 Henderson Highway. Purveyors of great music and good times since the year 2000.
But anyway, I know y'all probably want to know about that brawl last night. So I'm going to talk about it. But I was in right field chilling, probably thinking about, you know, my last at bat, or how that pitch was outside and called it a strike and it should have been a walk. But we ain't going to talk about that, right? So I'm looking down at my feet. And they say, you know, I hear the fans. I'm like, what are they? What's going on? So I look up. Puig and Honey, they going at it. Next thing you know, I feel a breeze, kind of feel like a light tornado just going right by me. It's the bullpen. I'm like, dang, my reaction time is way off. So I'm like, shoot, let me catch up with these people. By the time I got there, we was all just chilling, staring at each other. And literally, I thought about brightening the mood, and I was just going to get in a karate pose, like, come on. But I didn't do it. And that was it. That's basically most brawls, for outfielders anyway. But by the time you get there, it's over. So you just ran and got tired. Being in the outfield during a brawl is equivalent to a little kid showing up to a birthday party late. It's like you coming in all excited, and they already wet, and they eating cake. Damn, man, why you? But that's all I got. So that's what happened. That's what I did. And let's just play baseball, not fight, I guess. I don't know.
It's great. That's so funny. That's hilarious. And, like, I didn't know that Andrew McCutchen had that great of a personality until I saw that. And that's, like, that's on Major League Baseball. How could you, like, if he's that funny, and you know he's that funny, and there's no way that people don't know he's that funny, why is he not doing, like, more interviews? Why aren't you miking him up when he's in the outfield like they did with Mookie Betts? Like, that's just hilarious.
So that was, of course, Andrew McCutchen's Twitter. You can check that out at the Bench Jockeys. It's linked there. So we took the break to pull up the audio of that so we could give it a listen here.
It's hilarious.
On the show. So as I said before the break, we were going to talk a little bit about injuries. So running down some stuff that I pulled up off of MLB.com this morning. Yu Darvish, who we've talked about before, he's beginning his minor league rehab assignment this weekend, according to Joe Maddon. He threw 55 pitches in a simulated game on Tuesday. He played catch on flat ground prior to Thursday's game and was delivered good news about his prognosis and cleared to start that minor league rehab assignment. This, I mean, I think comes at a good time for the Cubs, as you know, both the Cardinals and the Brewers are. I mean, first of all, they're playing each other this weekend, so one of those teams quite likely is going to erase a little bit of that deficit. But you know, Cubs are only 3.5 games up on Milwaukee and 5 on St. Louis, and St. Louis has won what, 8 in a row.
Something to be said for firing your really, really awful manager. Shout out to the Toronto Blue Jays.
I think you're like meant to CC them or memo them on that, not necessarily show them.
Whatever works, right? However they end up figuring it out.
However they get the
message.
Yeah. Okay.
If someone wants to tweet this at him, go for it.
Send an owl if you're Harry Potter.
Yeah. That Cubs rotation is going to be crazy, right? Like, you're thinking about it, and you got John Lester, the Professor Kyle Hendricks.
Lester, who's looked resurgent, too.
So-so. I mean, like, he's had a couple really good games, but there's some, like, the thing with John Lester is if you get to him in the first inning, he's cooked. He's exactly the kind of guy that you'd want to use an opener for.
If you get on first base, he's cooked. That's
pretty much. In the early innings, right? He's exactly the kind of guy that you'd probably want to use an opener for. In all honesty. Mm-hmm. But Lester and the Professor Kyle Hendricks, you've got Cole Hamels.
Who has actually
been great
been
for them.
A solid pickup for them after kind of like a mediocre
stint
performance in Texas.
Yeah. And Yu Darvish coming back. Who else do they have? They got Montgomery, who's been fairly good as well. It basically means you don't got to pitch Tyler Chatwood, which to all Cubs fans probably sounds like a really, really good idea right now. Because Chatwood's not been great. He's been bad, and I got to eat a lot of crow on that one. I was riding the Chatwood bandwagon hard last year when he was in Colorado, and I thought he was going to be an incredible pickup for the Cubs. All his peripherals and numbers said he was going to be an incredible pickup for the Cubs, and he's just been bad, like across everything. He's just been terrible, and so getting Yu Darvish back is great. So, like, for the playoffs, who do you? The Cubs got to be the favorite in the NL, first of all. Second of all, who do you roll with as your starters? Do you trust Lester? Hendricks is absolutely one of your starters. And I think with the way that Hamels is pitched, you got to go with him.
And then you played, because Darvish is coming off an injury like this, you keep him in the bullpen and bring him in long relief or something like that?
Probably.
I mean, that's a great weapon to have in the bullpen.
Right, so yeah, do you roll a 3-man rotation or a 4-man rotation? Because if it's 3, it's Lester, Hendricks, Hamels, and everyone else is coming out of the pen. If it's 4, it's Lester, Hendricks, Hamels, Montgomery, and Darvish out of the pen, or do you start Darvish?
Yeah, I mean,
when the fact that we're talking about Yu Darvish as a potential fourth starter is insane to me. Also, by the way, but.
This is too true. That I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches in Chicago. No surprise that our pal has done such a great job with that.
Love Theo.
But I mean, Darvish, because of this, the nature of this injury, the extended period off, I err on the side of caution and keep him in the bullpen. But maybe there's something to be said for, like, getting him back into the routine, right? As a starter, he's accustomed to, you know.
I mean, we own Mad Bum in a fantasy league together, and he's had a pretty okay season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he hasn't been like full-on Mad Bum great, but he's been pretty good. So, like, do you really want to leave that in the pen, you know, game 7?
pull a Britton and never break the glass in case of emergency?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
And, I mean, you know, some guys
I think Darvish makes sense in the pen if you're going with a 3-man rotation. If you go to 4, then maybe
he's
Darvish
gotta start.
Is your fourth.
Yeah. And some guys just don't come out of the pen okay, right? Like, look at what happened to Phil Hughes. He went to the pen, and he just never came back the same. Brandon Morrow never came back the same when they kept trying to reinsert him into the rotation, and he didn't end up becoming an effective pitcher again until they just stuck him in the bullpen for good.
You're in the pen, and that's what you're doing.
You know, Joe Biagini was a starter, then in the pen, and then tried to go back to being a starter and just couldn't do it. And now, I don't know, it's like he turned back into the beans because he's just awful.
Turn back into the beans. I don't think I've ever heard that.
I totally mixed. I meant to say turn back into a pumpkin. But,
okay.
And like, also magic beans at the same time.
Do I,
so
do I know this?
That's like, that was a Matthew Berryism. Blow the roof off the doors right there.
Right, yeah.
Turn back into a set of magic beans.
That person's a rocket surgeon. So that's one of the injuries that's going along.
Way she goes.
Another great pitcher who is, still on the cusp of coming back, Shohei Ohtani. He's scheduled to throw a light bullpen session today.
Man, I just don't understand. Like, I get that the kid wants to play, and I get that the Angels want to play him, but, like, you're talking about an incredible long-term asset and potentially the best pitcher in baseball in 7 or 8 years' time, and you're going to play games with his elbow?
Yeah, so he... Apparently, so it's light today. Then he's scheduled. The plan is to throw an aggressive session next week in Arizona, but hasn't pitched since June 6th after spraining the right elbow ligament. It's a good question because I mean, this is the Angels. They got a fairly long term deal with him.
Yeah, it's very long term, and like Mike Trout is still what, like only 27. So like, don't play games with a star pitcher's elbow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is especially elbows, hard throwing pitchers with elbows. It's that or shoulders. You hear that and you just kind of
just like, crazy
bristle a little bit. in news that you may or may not care about at this point, Josh Donaldson could be nearing his return from the left calf injury that's kept him out since late May. I mean, obviously...
Care a little bit.
You care because he's a J, but, like, I mean, what's he rushing back for at this point?
Yeah, I would just shut him down for the whole year, right? Like, what? I don't know,
Do you
man.
Expect to... I mean, so...
I don't
if
ever
he stays
expect
off
to
the
see...
field, do you expect to see him in a J's uniform again?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah, I think that, like, the... Atkins and Shapiro are like, king of the half measure. And like the team isn't going to compete next year, and so they've got to keep butts in seats, and that's how you keep butts in seats, right? There are two ways that they keep butts in seats, and one of them is to keep Josh Donaldson, and the other is to call up Vlad Jr. And I'm pretty sure they're not calling up Vlad Jr. because they want to keep service time. He's not going to be up until the Super 2 deadline, which is what, in May. And maybe even further than that in June, just so they can keep an entire another year of service time, not even just the... Because the Jays aren't competing next year. They're not.
No.
The Yankees are too good. The Red Sox are too good. The Rays are going to find ways to do Rays things.
Rays going to Ray, yeah.
So...
I mean, yeah, the Rays are currently over 500 at 62-59.
The Jays are going to
They traded most of the people that would have been considered quality players at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, Longo and Souza and...
Archer was effectively their starter, the number one starter.
Pretty much everybody but Kurt Kiermaier.
They traded Ramos, too.
Yep.
Yeah, no, they've... It's them and the A's. Honestly, like...
I just don't get it.
It's kind of...
It's magic.
Astonishing. The
talk about magic
things.
Beans. Now we can talk about magic beans.
That's a magic bean right there. So as we mentioned, you know, the Astros facing off against the A's this weekend in a series that really... matters in terms of the postseason. The Astros are going to have to do it, of course, without Jose Altuve, their all-star second baseman, who's on the disabled list. He fielded grounders and took practice at Minute Maid Park on Wednesday, but is still out dealing with the sore right knee, and he declined to talk to reporters.
You want to talk about embarrassment of riches? They can... The freaking Astros can just do that, right? They can play Correa at second, slide Bregman over to shortstop, and have Gurriel play third and just not care.
Springer expected to start this series against the A's back after spraining his left thumb August 5th against the Dodgers, and apparently has been doing full baseball activities for a couple days and now cleared to rejoin the team. Altuve may or may not travel. With the team, he's slated to work out at Minute Maid Park. So, that's according to AJ Hinch, the manager of the Astros. So we were talking earlier about the Mariners and the fact that, like, you know, there's a chance that a team that goes 70-52 right now, like a, you know, really great winning percentage, could not make the postseason. One huge complication that they encountered this week is having to place James Paxton on the 10-day DL. He was knocked out of the start on Tuesday with a bruised left forearm.
Could have been worse.
So certainly, I mean, just a bruise is...
Because he got hit. He got hit with a comebacker.
And that's, I mean, we've seen comebackers have, like, well, I mean, you've seen breaks.
Yeah, I mean, it sidelined J.A. Happ's career for a really long time as well, right? When he got hit in the head with a comebacker.
Was he in the Mariners at that point?
No, that was...
He was a Mariner was at
Jay.
One point. He was a J when he
was a J. He got hit with that, and then it took him a while. Or was it... Was it J.A. Happ, or was it one of the guys that was pitching with the Rays? No. It was against the Rays that he got hit. He was in the trop. And yeah, it was J.A. Happ, and he got beaned, and he had a really awful concussion and was, like, bleeding out of his ears. And it took him a really long time to come back. So,
yeah. Keep your eye on the
Big Maple gets better.
The Big Maple there.
They moved Felix to the bullpen, eh?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
How the mighty have fallen in that respect. So another team that's sort of facing some injuries as a rough time is as the Brewers square off against the resurgent Cardinals. They are going to be doing it possibly without Ryan Braun, Manny Pena, and Jimmy Nelson. All of these guys dealing with injuries. Both Braun day-to-day with a tight rib cage and Pena getting an MRI of his left shoulder after losing to the Cubs Wednesday.
Do they really care about any of those guys but Pena? Like, Braun is great and everything like that. He's a very good hitter, but I don't really think that they care all that much. They've got such a...
great young...
Yeah, and a wealth of corner infielders, right? Like, it's so bad that they're playing Travis Shaw at second base right now, which the Cubs announcers wouldn't let me forget the other day when I was listening to the Cubs Brewers game. And they don't even care in the outfield though, right? Because you've got Thames, Yelich, Kane, Broxton, Perez, all out in the outfield that you can play. So, like, do you really? And Aguilar's great at first base. So, like, do you really care that you're missing Ryan Braun? Not really all that much. Like, maybe if he comes back in time for the World Series and they're there, then he can DH. But, like, yeah, I don't care. If I'm the Brewers, I'm not all that interested in getting Ryan Braun back.
Well, the Brewers currently 3.5 games back of the Cubs and 1.5 games up on the Cards. So, you know, that's a series to watch this weekend. Lots of baseball to watch this weekend. The Goldeyes hosting this weekend. And tomorrow night is Zombie Night. And it features fireworks after the game. That is a 6 o'clock start tomorrow.
Always love the zombie nights.
Game. Should be a lot of fun. And we hope you enjoy your weekend. We'll be back next Friday here on the Bench Jockeys. Keep it locked for Democracy Now! After this.
See ya.